You are so lucky to have a pastor with a sense of humor. I tell you, humor makes everything go better. If you can laugh about it, you can deal with it. Now, we did have a wonderful lunch, at least I did. But for some of you, where is your primary blood support right now? In your stomach, not in your brain. How do you get it back to your brain? Stand up. So, here's the deal. If you start feeling sleepy, there's lots of room to walk, sides and back. Get up and move. Here's the research. Large sample studies, 50% of people in the studies learned best, if they learned at all, when they were standing and moving. Which I think is one of the reasons when you go to big cathedrals in Europe, how many chairs are there? None. People stand and they learn. So get up anytime you want to and move. Because it's a pity to waste an hour. Now, you're not wasting it if you're sleeping, but as the pastor says, your quality of sleep sitting in a pew is going to be slim to nil. So, all right, the power of sleep and what happens when you don't get enough. Now, everybody knows that sleep is important, but we had no idea of the reason. And now we know the reason. And it's actually pretty exciting as far as I'm concerned. So, remember this first sentence. Read it with me. Sleep is independently linked with longevity. Do you know what that means? What does it mean? Sleep is independently linked with longevity. It means that you can be doing lots of wonderful things, but if your brain does not get the sleep it needs, it will shorten your life. Now, that is not one of my goals. I already told you I'd like to live to be at least, what? 110, super centenarian. Now, quite frankly, I'm aiming to live a lot longer than that. But it's nice to have goals. When I get to be 110, I'll move it up. Now, when you are sleeping, is your brain sleeping? Not even remotely. So, during sleep, your brain is actually busier than when it is awake. Because it's got so many chores to do to help you stay healthy and younger for longer. Now, what does that really mean? It means, supposing that you have a house cleaning service, and you book them every day to come in for 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 hours, because every brain has a different sleep requirement. So every house has a different cleaning requirement. But instead of staying the whole time, they leave an hour or two early. So what would have gotten done during that last hour or two doesn't get done. And they come to work the next day. And they leave early again. So they don't make up for yesterday, and there's more stuff today that didn't get done. And pretty soon, the toxins build up in the brain, and that's eventually what can shorten your life, to say nothing about impacting your health. Now, here's something else we've learned. Mental exercise and fatigue from that takes more recovery time than physical exercise and the fatigue that comes with that. Because that's a muscle-based function, not a brain-based function. And the brain is so complex. If you looked at somebody sleeping and they weren't snoring, you might think they were in a coma. Because they're very still, nothing much is moving, if at all. But sleep is not like a coma because it's partially conscious, meaning you can be aroused easily, pretty easily. You know, you can be in a deep, deep sleep and somebody can come in and yell in your ear or shake you, or the alarm goes off or the phone rings and you are wide awake. That doesn't happen in a coma. You cannot be aroused in a coma. Some of the bodily functions are blocked, yes. It would have to be pretty strong odor to wake you up. That's often why how people keep sleeping, even though part of the house is on fire. They're not processing the smell of the smoke. And that's why smoke detectors are so critical, because you might not smell that in time to save yourself. And if it's a gas leak that has no odor at all, then you're really in trouble, because those stimuli to those senses is lowered and reduced. Now, sleep is really, really complicated. I am not going to go through the whole thing, but I'm going to show you just enough to let you see how complicated it is. And no wonder people have problems with it. You will sleep, on average, 1/3 of your lifetime if you're giving your brain enough sleep. 1/3 of your lifetime will be spent sleeping while your brain is doing tons of housekeeping. I'm going to be ending up sleeping more than 1/3 of my life because I need 9 hours. My aunt needed 10. My dad only needed 7. My mom needed 8. There's different requirements. You need to know what yours requires and you need to give it to it. If I didn't get 9 hours sleep, and I did last night, Your Reverence, I love to call ministers revs. My dad thought it was a bit sacrilegious, but hey, it's fun. And if I can't remember their name, it's just Hi Rev. Okay, where was I? That totally derailed me. I remember the first time I called somebody Rev and was taken into my father's office for a little chat. So, I need 9 hours. I got 9 hours last night. People who have heard me speak frequently, if I only get 8, I will know it, and I will try to compensate for that. But if you know me very well, and you're used to hearing me speak, and I get 7, you'll wonder, what in the world is wrong with her? Because it will make a difference. Here is that cutaway of the brain again. If you put that all together, then you'd have that nice little cutaway. Well, let's go down here to that first reptilian layer. And in this part of the brain, there's something called the RAS, Reticular Activating System. And that is what stimulates the brain to be wide awake. Okay, got that? Tell me if I'm not saying it in a way that you get it. Down here in the brain stem, that's what wakes you up and keeps you alert while you're awake. Now, in order to sleep, you've got to block that off. And that's a complex process. In the thalamus, which is really right here at the bottom of this second layer, there's something called sleep on cells. Now, go figure. Most of the names of stuff in the brain and body are so difficult I can hardly remember them. And now we come to the sleep on cells. Wonder why they didn't do that more often. The sleep on cells block this reticular activating system and allow you to go to sleep. So if these two are out of whack, you're in trouble. You'll be sleeping, dozing off in the daytime and wide awake at night. In the hypothalamus, which is up here also in this middle layer, there is a master circadian rhythm clock. And it is fine-tuned by sunlight. So you want to have your bedroom absolutely as dark as possible so that the light doesn't interfere with sleep. And as soon as you get up in the morning, you want to open the windows, turn the lights on. You want to get light into your retina so that it will go into the brain and wake you up with this circadian clock business. Now, there's a problem with daylight saving time. And some states have actually banned it because it interferes with the circadian rhythm of this clock, which was designed to have you go to sleep when the sun goes down approximately and get up when the sun comes up. But because of all our artificial light, we could stay up all night if we want to. And that messes with that clock. And then you come up here to the third layer, the neocortex, so that when the sleep-on cells are done, it's time for you to wake up, then the reticular activating system stimulates the conscious thought part of the brain to wake up and know your name and who you are and what you're doing next. So can you see how complicated that is among those three layers? And it doesn't take a lot to get that disrupted. I mentioned that the brain does not rest during sleep. Many parts of it are more active in the brain than when you are awake. And some of the things that do get suppressed, we already mentioned a few of them, but other things keep going automatically. It's the subconscious automatic part. So you're breathing, you keep breathing, even when you're asleep, hopefully. Your heart rate keeps going, your blood pressure stays up. All of those things continue as usual, but your whole gastrointestinal system is supposed to get a break. Unless you've gotten in the habit of snacking late at night. Now imagine you got a bread maker machine at home, and you keep making bread 24 hours a day around the clock. When are you going to clean the machine? And it could get pretty crusty. But if you eat just before going to bed, all of your digestive processes now keep going. They don't rest, but they don't let the brain rest either, because the biggest, longest, most important nerve in your body is the vagus nerve. And it runs from your GI tract up to your brain. And you're more likely to have a restless sleep. You're more likely to dream. Sometimes the dreams won't be very pleasant. Two types of brain waves. Not going to spend any time on them. You can go look them up on the internet if you want. Just so you know, because we may talk about some of them a little bit. Most human sleeping is slow wave or non-rapid eye movement, NREM sleep. I'm sure you've heard of REM and NREM. And when you're in this NREM stage, large, slow brain waves, relaxed muscles, slow, deep breathing. But then you come to a part of your sleep cycle that is rapid eye movement sleep, and that's when you usually dream. Now, you can dream in other parts of the sleep cycle, but it's most likely that you'll dream during REM sleep. So if you don't get enough sleep, let's say me, my brain needs 9 hours, I only get 8, well, the intensity of this sleep, when you finally do go back to sleep, increases. It works harder, but it doesn't work longer. So that eventually you can become fairly sleep deprived because you never catch up. How much sleep do you need? Children age 7 to puberty, on average, 8 hours. That's your 1/3 of your life. But teenagers need more than that, because their brains are being rewired. And one of these times, I'd love to share with you how differently the male brain is wired from the female brain. Looks like two different species under the brain scan system. So Up till age puberty, the brains look pretty much the same on brain scans. But at puberty, the program that was set in place during pregnancy kicks in, and now the brain rewires itself. So I think we need to cut these teenagers a little slack. How would you like to be living in your house and have it completely being rewired? Would be a little stressful and uncomfortable. Their brains are being rewired. They need 9 hours of sleep. Research shows that in this day of social media, they are not getting 9 hours sleep. And some of them develop what's called a delayed sleep phase disorder. It's a literal disorder that they tend to grow out of, but it messes with that circadian clock. So if ordinarily they and their parents would go to bed at 10 o'clock, that teenage brain is not remotely sleepy till midnight or 1. But school still starts in the morning. And if they've stayed up with their electronics, they may only get 4 or 5 hours sleep, and it's no wonder that they're not doing well in school. It's no wonder that they're irritable. It's no wonder they have headaches. It's no wonder they crave sugar. Anything to try to keep the brain energized. And the average adult, bell curve, needs somewhere between 7 and 8. A few need less, some need more. I need 9, my aunt needed 10, and she lived to be 100. And she says it's because she got the sleep her brain needed every night. The more sleep you need, you've lost some, you really need sleep, the faster you fall asleep, which is interesting. Unless you are involved with anxiety, unless you're letting your mind rehearse and ruminate over the people you aren't going to forgive or who did what to whom and so on and so forth. A little bit about brain physiology. It's only 2% of your total body weight unless you are really overweight and obese. But it uses 20% of all the oxygen, all the micronutrition, all of everything that supports energy, 3 times as much oxygen as the body muscle cells. Did you know that? Everybody thinks the muscle cells take all of this, need all this energy. Well, your brain uses 3 times what your muscles do. And twice as much as any other body cell. The brain is an energy hog, meaning it uses more resources than any other body organ to help do for you what it does. But here's the kicker. Has no stores of oxygen, no stores of glucose. So it needs a regular supply of blood bringing it oxygen and glucose. And that's why exercise is so important, because exercise increases your heart rate and rushes the blood through your brain and body, so it not only brings you nutrients, but it collects waste. Now, this is something relatively new that we have learned. Body cells can use carbohydrates, fats, and proteins for energy. Your brain neurons can only use carbohydrates. Now, there's a big pitch right now for low-carb or no-carb diets. And researchers are wondering what the brain's going to be like in 10 or 20 years. Because the brain neurons only use carbs. Now, there are simple carbs, and there are complex carbs, and there's unhealthy carbs, and there's healthier carbs. Well, you need to learn which ones are healthier and eat those. Sugar is a completely unhealthy carb. Eating too much fruit is even unhealthy because fruit contains glucose and sucrose and whatever else. Nutritionists can tell you. Some of the researchers actually bluntly say breakfast should be your most important meal of the day, and you must eat healthier carbs because you want to boot up your brain and get the energy up for the rest of the day. And so people who think, I don't need breakfast, I don't even want to eat breakfast, I can get by with breakfast, you're starving your brain neurons. And that will last the whole day. So got to figure out a way to have breakfast, because breakfast means break fast. You've been fasting, hopefully, since whenever you ate your last meal the night before and not up snacking in the middle of the night. And that's giving your digestive system a time to recover. But you need to boot up your brain in the morning, just like you'd boot up your computer. You don't boot up your computer, you don't use it. Well, you don't boot up your brain, you could have a problem with how accurately it works. Now, this is what fascinates some of us brain function researchers. We now know what the brain is doing while you're sleeping, or what it's supposed to be doing while you're sleeping. Number one, it restores your brain energy reserves and helps to maintain homeostasis, energy balance. So how much energy I have tomorrow is directly related to how much sleep I get tonight. It processes what happened during the previous 24 hours through dreaming during the rapid eye movement stage. You may not have any idea that that's what it's doing. Let me give you an analogy. I have not seen this happen, but I have friends who are actors. And they tell me that, let's say they're shooting a movie. So during the day, they shoot the film. And then the actors go home, get some rest. But there is an editor who reviews all of that footage, usually works during the night, decides what's good, what needs to be redone, and so on. Well, in a way, the brain is doing that very same thing. It is reviewing everything that happened during the last 24 hours and replaying it in your brain. And so some of your dreaming, if you even remember it, is the brain processing what happened and thinking about it and deciding, you know, do we want to forgive that person or don't we? Because the brain makes some of those decisions and then pushes you to act on them. And that's where you need to cognitively decide if the urge to go alter that person's nose is really what you want to do. It consolidates information processed during the day and moves it from short-term to long-term memory. So the hippocampus, your brain search engine, is replaying everything that happened in the last 24 hours, and the editor in your prefrontal cortex is deciding, okay, that's important, let's put that in long-term memory. Oh, get rid of that, we don't need that. And that takes a long time, because we take in through the brain 10 million bits of sensory data every second. We could never process that on our own. So by the way we live teaches the subconscious what's important to us and what isn't. And so as the editor is replaying everything that happened to you, your prefrontal cortex is deciding what to save and what not to save based on what it has learned is important to you. And if you're in school and studying, and you hate school, and you don't like your teachers, and the Bible teaches a complete waste, then your brain thinks anything that you are learning in that genre isn't important, and let's not bother saving it. Do you understand how that works? So there are times when we take in valuable information that somebody has spent time and energy to learn and share with you, and you don't remember any of it because that's never been important to you. You know, my health is my health. I'll live how long I live. So if I get sick, I get sick. That is not how I want to manage my life. It repairs the cells in the hippocampus. That's your brain search engine. so that you want to remember something and it will go out and search for where that is and hopefully bring it to your attention. So, Wendy comes up to me. I haven't seen her for 10 years. And she says, "Do you remember me?" And I look at her and my brain says, "You absolutely know that face." I probably could figure out where I last saw it, but it's just faster to ask her. But my hippocampus has already been out there telling me, "You've seen her before." And I have, many times. So, your hippocampus so far is the only organ in the brain that we know of that can make new cells. All the other cells, you have the same cells that you had when you were a baby. Now, how have you been taking care of those cells? Because that's what you got. And that is the biggest reason, in my brain's opinion, for doing nothing that we have learned negatively impacts the neurons, because I want mine to last to at least age 110. So I wouldn't think of using substances that might trigger your brain reward system and give you a shot of dopamine, but could actually kill some of those cells, because I can't replace them. Only place right now we know you can replace anything is in that hippocampus. It helps regulate appetite, mood, and libido. You're a young couple, you're married, you're losing sleep, you decide you want to have a child, and guess what? She can't get pregnant. Because if you lose sleep, that's one of the extraneous, unnecessary activities that the brain is not going to resource. And sometimes it's as simple as getting more sleep, and then all of a sudden, reproduction starts up. It's amazing. If you're anxious, you may not be able to get pregnant. So a couple will adopt a child, and guess what happens? 6 months later, they have one of their, 9 months later, they have one of their own. Because the anxiety did not keep the brain engaged. If you lose sleep, statistically, you will eat 300 to 400 additional calories the next day than you would have if you'd had enough sleep. So you keep losing sleep, you keep eating extra calories, trying to give the brain energy, and now you start moving yourself to be overweight, and if you keep at it, you will become obese, which is a pandemic worldwide. And obesity is linked with the increased risk for 50 chronic illnesses. You have to have enough sleep to maintain an appropriate weight. It increases the blood supply to your muscle cells, so it actually helps them recover from working all day, and it releases hormones for growth and development. I didn't grow very tall. I don't even know how tall I am, but I'm probably an inch shorter than I was. And I say it's because I had such a tough life as a preacher's kid. Because this is what we know. If you are under a lot of stress as a child, and you lie awake at night and worry and so on, you will not release enough of the growth hormone to let you reach your height that you would have been if you hadn't had such a stressed life. And that can amount to an inch or two, which I think is just absolutely fascinating. And no, I don't think I had that stressful a life. You know, people ask me sometimes, other preacher's kids often, "Do you wish you hadn't been a preacher's kid?" Well, that's all I knew, for one thing. How do you wish for something when you don't know what something else would be like? But I can tell you, that set me up for being able to go around the world and share this information and not mind whether people liked it or not. And that is huge, because you just put it out like today's buffet. People take what they want, take what they need. Hopefully they take something, but that's not my job. And I think being a preacher's kid taught me that. Because my dad, when I would get discouraged, he'd say, "Arlene, You're doing your best. It's their perception. Avoid letting that bother you. Well, that's pretty hard. I remember one time, you know, I was taught to close your eyes, fold your hands, kneel down, bow your head. That's how you prayed. Well, we had one elder in one of the churches who I think is a wannabe minister but wasn't. The longest prayer I ever timed was 17 minutes. Okay, when you're 8 and somebody's droning on up there with all these cliches for 17 minutes, it's really hard to keep your mouth shut and your eyes closed. So this one particular day, I just opened one of them a little. It's amazing what you see when you open your eyes and everybody thinks that everybody's eyes are closed. So I'm sitting there and I'm looking around just trying to see something that'll make my knees stop hurting. Church was not carpeted. And I see this guy on the front row, loveliest head of white hair I'd ever seen. I was just looking at him, back of his head, and I saw him reach up and scratch his head. And guess what? His hair moved. I opened my other eye. He scratched some more, and his hair moved a little bit more. That's the first time I knew ever that men wore wigs. And I don't know what he was scratching for, but pretty soon it fell right off in the lap of the woman next to him. She squeaked. Now I'm raised up on my knees looking. She picks his hair up and looks at him and hands it to him. Well, by then some of the other people around him had seen what was going on. They started tittering. My dad even opened his eyes. He told me later he did. Guy grabs his hairpiece, flops it on his head. Only problem is he put it on backwards. So now he's got all these stringy hairs hanging down. I laughed till I cried. My mother was unamused. She keeps elbowing me. Stop laughing. Don't laugh. Okay, how does that help anything? I kid you not, I have a dent in my rib cage. It aligns perfectly with the shape of my mother's elbow. So on the way out of church that day, one of the well-meaning but totally unenlightened members says to me, "It is inappropriate for the minister's daughter to be laughing in church, and I heard you." I said, "Well, did you see what happened to the guy's wig on the front row?" She says, "My eyes were closed." I doubt it, but that's what she said. She said, "Don't you think it's really interesting? There are no pictures of Christ smiling or laughing." And I said, "Well, that's because all the artists were depressed." And she went and had a talk with the pastor. And it wasn't about her salvation. So, you know, what can I say? Anyway, so after you live through 17, 18 years of that, if somebody comes up and said, "I really didn't like what you said today," you know, what are you going to do? "I regret that. Thanks for coming anyway. I hope maybe your brain will remember something you said that could help you." You know, you can't please everybody. And that's what being a preacher's kid taught me. Okay, during sleep, it lowers your body temperature. It lowers the level of metabolic energy that's being used, because that energy then is used into repairing cells. So if you don't get a good sleep, and as long as a sleep you need, you won't repair the cells. And there are cells throughout your body that mutate, that are not quite normal. Little, you know, brick short of a load, as they say. And you need to have those repaired. It synthesizes new chemicals for both the brain and the immune system, and the immune system is just totally amazing. I mean, sometime we'll have to talk about that. It's Star Wars Plus. It actually creates the cells that repair the immune system, and it works on repairing the brain cells that you've had since you were a baby. That's a lot to do every night. And we're not done yet. Now, you may remember from biology that the neurons don't touch each other. There's a space called the synapse, synaptic gap. Well, during sleep, the brain widens that space and flushes out any toxins, any waste products that are in that space. And the molecules it gets rid of includes those beta amyloid proteins that are now believed to form the plaques related to Alzheimer's. So are you starting to see how we don't really control everything that happens to us directly, but we control a whole bunch of it indirectly? So some people can actually increase their risk for Alzheimer's through lack of sleep. It collects, it's called reuptake, when these brain chemicals are released from one of the fingers, the dendrites on a neuron, and floated across this space. Then there are skin divers, if you want to think of it that way, that dive over there to the other side, collect all of these chemicals and bring them back and put them back in their little sacks, so the next time you want to think, they'll be there ready to carry the message across. The brain's very conserving. It's not wasteful. But it does remove the waste products from the brain. Oh, and it's not only a dietitian, but it's a chef. Because it creates the food that the neurons must have, called neurotrophins. It increases the production of that myelin that wraps the long axon of a neuron that is called the white matter in the brain. And it is responsible for thinking at the rates of, in the right hemisphere, probably 600 miles an hour, 200 miles an hour in the left hemisphere. And what are we talking, 3 inches here? It's lightning fast, it's nanosecond fast. And that myelin is really important. And in the teenage years, the bridges that connect the two hemispheres, the largest of which is the corpus callosum or corpus callosum, that has to get paved with that myelin. Think fiber optics. And it takes at least till age 20 or 21 before the bridges are even paved. So just picture in these poor teenage kids' brains, part of the road is gravel and there's some potholes. I mean, no wonder they make decisions that people's brains that are supposedly done are going, what were they thinking? Well, they're doing the best they have with the brain that's not done yet. Because it's got to be paved. Now, as a preacher's kid, I was a little, sometimes, judgmental. Do not know where that came from. But I remember asking my father, why did Christ waste so much time? He said, excuse me? I said, well, he didn't start being a preacher till he was 30 years old. That's over the hill. And Dad goes, well, not quite. I said, but why didn't he start when he was 18 or 20? Look how much more he could have done. Well, Dad says, for whatever reason, he started when he was 30, and he did more in 3 years than most people do in a whole lifetime. Okay, well, now we know how long it takes for the brain to mature. He had a lot of stressful, hard decisions to make. He needed a brain that was done. And it wasn't done till 30. And I frankly believe I've met some people who were 40, 50, and 60, and their brains weren't done yet. What can I tell you? Just my brain's opinion. All right. So if you don't get enough sleep, deprivation, it's a major risk for many mental disorders, including anxiety and depression. And you probably already know that worldwide, anxiety is the number one mental disorder, followed by depression. Millions and millions and millions of people are anxious and depressed. But too much isn't good either. Remember, we talked about homeostasis. Everything in balance. Well, too little sleep or more than you need are both established risk factors for heart disease, stroke, diabetes, kidney disease, and common infections like flu and pneumonia. So how well do you want to be? Get your forgiveness thing in order and get enough sleep. The circadian rhythm, I think that's such fun. We'll just spend a couple seconds on it. It's about 24 hours, the circadian clock, but it's not exactly 24 hours. It's 24 hours and a few minutes. And I mentioned already that it's the light from the sun that keeps it what's called entrained. It keeps it running as close to 24 hours as possible. You've probably heard at least on the radio, if I'm listening to the news when I'm driving, there's something called the non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. Have you heard of the non-24? People whose, for whatever reason, their eyes do not let enough light hit the retina, the circadian cycle starts extending longer and longer and longer. If you put somebody in pitch black solitary confinement, you know, for a month, pretty soon their circadian clock doesn't know what time it is, and everything gets messed up. So it's so critical that it gets light from the sun to keep that entrained. It doesn't react well to sudden changes, rapid changes in light and dark. So that's where jet lag comes from. And I suppose a lot of you have experienced jet lag. I've worked very hard figuring out a system to minimize it because it's a 15-hour flight all by itself just to get to Australia, and I go there every year, sometimes two or three times. So you have to help the brain jump the time zones, as it were, so that you can get there and really have very little jet lag. And it goes like this. Say the flight is at 10:30 p.m. to Sydney. I got to be there at 7:30. I immediately start living the time it is in Sydney, whatever time that is. And when I get on the plane, you know, if it's 5 o'clock in the morning in Sydney, but it's 10:30 at night here, then I'm not going to go to bed right away at all. I'm going to try to live that time, whatever it is. And when it's night there, then I sleep in my seat. If it's day there, I stay awake. And when I get there, if it's day, I stay awake till it's night there. And it's amazing. Usually within a few hours, I have no problem because I've already helped my brain start jumping those time zones. So it's amazing what you can do for your brain. 20 to 40% of Americans do shift work. I grew up, you know, after going to Loma Linda University as a nurse, working all kinds of shifts. They didn't work so good for me. 60 to 70% of shift workers have sleep disorder. They fall asleep at work because the circadian clock isn't working right. And there's a lot of people make mistakes in healthcare, just like on assembly lines, but they tend to make more errors on the job. If they're especially rotating shifts, if you have to work a shift, you're better to work it and live it 7 days a week. You know, if you're on evenings, then you just keep doing that on the weekend and everything else. If you're on the night shift, keep doing that, because it's very hard on the brain to do 2 weeks of nights, 2 weeks of evenings, 2 weeks of days, and so on. And the people who have to do that, higher risk of heart disease, gastrointestinal disorders, menstrual irregularities, weakened immune systems, certain cancers, emotional problems, divorce, substance abuse, depression, and social relationship problems. Brain's not working right. Seasonal affective disorder, you've heard of that. You live in a place where there's not enough light to get to the retina. I was up in Fairbanks, Alaska. They have a really high rate of seasonal affective disorder because there's not enough light in the wintertime. You know, the sun comes up about 10 and it's very weak and goes down about 2. And there's high rates of depression and suicide. Now they've learned to get a bank of lights with natural light bulbs, and they put it in the kitchen or wherever, and the minute they get up in the morning, they turn it on, flood the light in through their eyes to the retina, and they've almost eliminated some of that terrible depression and suicide. So, sleep deprivation. What are the symptoms? Daytime sleepiness, irritability. Anytime someone's irritable, I first think, it's nothing about me, they didn't get enough sleep last night. Nervousness, can't manage stress well, arguing, fighting, relationship conflict, problems with concentration and memory, especially going to school, behavioral learning, other social problems, risk of blurred vision, distractibility. Gentlemen, I don't have a problem with this, but you might. Prostate cancer, linked with lack of sleep, increased risk for prostate cancer. 300 calories the next day for people who slept 4 hours instead of whatever they needed. Clumsiness with accidents in industries. The motor vehicle department will tell you that a big chunk of accidents are people, drivers falling asleep while they're driving. Chronic inflammation, frequent infections, increases your risk of aging quicker, and a shorter lifespan. And we're not done. High blood pressure, heart disease, stroke, anxiety, depression, suicide risk, Alzheimer's, other dementias, insulin resistance and diabetes, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Sometimes enough sleep will reduce the symptoms of that. Increased risk of fertility, we talked about that. Decreased libido and sex drive. Vaccine effectiveness, you might take a flu shot and it won't do any good because your immune system's depressed. And especially for teachers and among students, memory and problem-solving difficulties. That's a lot just from losing sleep. 20 hours without sleep, your reaction time is similar to that of a person with a blood alcohol level of the legal limit in California. So you can be drunk as a skunk from lack of sleep. Nothing to do with alcohol. All right. Your biological clock can become programmed in just 2 or 3 days. And if you stay up late on Friday and Saturday nights, then sleep in on Saturday and Sunday mornings, that can make it really hard for you to wake up on Monday morning. And Monday morning is the most difficult day of the week in large sample studies for many people. And the risk of heart attack and stroke is higher on Monday morning than any other day of the week. So one of the things you can definitely do is try to go to bed at the same time every night on the weekends, as well as during the week. And sometimes I'll deviate for an hour or so, but not much more than that. All right, so this is how you get a good sleep, according to the latest research. Sleep in a dark, cool room. If you can, avoid rotating shifts. If you've got to do a shift, then do that shift. No electronics in the bedroom. Zip, nada, none. No cell phone, no iPads, no computers, no TV. Even if you aren't listening to it or using it, it puts out electromagnetic energy that has been found to impair sleep. So my cell phone, my watch, my computer are all in a totally different room. I try really hard to avoid eating after 7. I usually like to eat at home I eat 2 meals a day because that works for me. You know, I eat about 9:30 in the morning, about 3:30 in the afternoon. By the time I go to bed, my stomach's empty. The latest research says you might want to drink a glass of water before going to sleep because it's been shown to help reduce a risk of strokes because it helps to keep your blood flowing very easily. And the last thing is hum yourself to sleep. Interesting new research. So you take a deep breath in. At the easiest pitch for you to hum. And what does that do? No, can't sing a song. Because that'll activate your brain thinking of the words. This has been shown to vibrate both brain and body tissue, and you can't think of anything else if you're thinking about breathing in through your nose and humming, you know, as you exhale. And I've trained my brain to do this. It's really been kind of fun. You know, if you sleep with somebody, they might want earplugs unless you have a really beautiful hum. But after about 3 hums, I start yawning. My brain goes, oh, okay, we're ready to go to sleep. Sometimes I count. I don't know when I went to sleep. I just know that in the morning I fell asleep sometime while I was humming. So you might try it. You know, you might not like it, but I'm having fun with it. All right, have you got it? Say it with me. Sleep is independently linked with? Say it with me. Sleep is independently linked with longevity. So how long do you want to live? Okay, so now you know what to do. All right, I'd like you to get up and move around and give your brain some air. And move your muscles. And in about 10 minutes, we'll come back and talk about the latest research on water, and it's just as much fun as sleep.